Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, November 14th. I'm Lisa Music reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, cannabis permit held off due to fire water theft accusation. Key witness with troubling Humboldt ties testifies in national child murder trial. And the KMOD Weekly Sports Report with Ray Hamill. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. Humboldt County's Planning Commission has held off on approving a cannabis cultivation permit due to its link to an 18-acre fire and alleged water theft. Daniel Mintz reports.
Approval of a Dinsmore area cannabis cultivation permit is in suspense due to concerns about a fire at the farm site and a water theft allegation. A conditional use permit for the existing 11,700-square-foot farm had been recommended for Humboldt County Planning Commission approval, but that changed when a site fire broke out on October 2nd, one day before the permit was up for a consent agenda vote. The fire spread and ultimately burned 18 acres before CAL FIRE and U.S. Forest Service firefighters squelched it with help from local fire departments. The commission held off on approving the permit due to lack of information about the cause of the fire and took it up again at its November 7th meeting, this time with a staff recommendation for denial. County Planner Andrew Whitney presented details about the fire and an additional concern spurred by a neighbor's comments on potential theft of well water from an adjacent property.
The fire started at a dry building. It's the dry shed for the cannabis. The CAL FIRE report noted unsafe electrical conditions. The failure to report the fire, it's unclear at this time who exactly reported the fire, but we have neighbor testimony that the workers on site abandoned the fire without attempting to put it out, or at least sticking around to notify authorities. The other reason stated is they are not complying with the terms of their operations plan based on evidence presented by a neighbor. Neighbor responded to the fire and was on 8 Mile Ridge Road about, I think, 20 yards off the road. They noticed a well and a generator, which is on parcel 208-241-011, which is diagonally to the southeast of the subject parcel. And fire was going on, and they said, well, we can use this water to fight the fire. So they got gas, fired up the generator, and started running the pump. Turns out there was plenty of water stored on the project. They didn't need that. But the commenter followed the pipe to the project and to some of the tanks on the subject parcel, indicating that the well was being used to fill the tanks on the subject parcel.
Whitney said attempts to contact the project applicant, Marcos Tiofsky, doing business as 10 Redwoods LLC, were unsuccessful. The denial recommendation is, quote, a hard one on me because I don't really enjoy denying a project, he told commissioners. But he said planning staff is, quote, unable to make the finding that the project is being run in a safe manner. The farm operation is otherwise competent. Whitney said the farm seemed clean and well-run when he visited the site. But with a denial looming, Tiofsky had some explaining to do.
Due to personal medical reasons, I was unable to attain while the fire was gone. My manager, my cousin Zlatko, he came as soon as he could. When I was notified by the fire, I have approval on my text that I gave instructions to the fire department to be called immediately. If the workers called the fire department or not, I do not know. I'm willing to work with the community to assure the procedures are followed from the farm and for the surroundings, that the farm will follow the procedures and the safety. Since I've spoken with a few of the neighbors, and I'm hearing their direct concerns, and we are addressing and talking about the issues that they have been concerned about. And some of them, they are willing to write a letter of recommendations for supporting the project.
On the water theft allegation, Tiofsky suggested it doesn't make sense because, quote, we have plenty of water, so there's no reason why water would be taken. He asked for a continuance, saying, quote, more evidence needs to be gathered. Commission Chair Thomas Mulder, who is a cannabis farmer, noted that emergency plans should be part of farm operations. Tiofsky admitted that his three employees haven't been trained to handle emergencies. In this exchange with Commissioner Sarah West, Senior Planner Cliff Johnson was asked if cannabis farm fires have been reported to the county.
Is it standard for Cal Fire to contact you when they're aware that there's a fire on a grow? Or does the county track the fires that are happening with the permitted cannabis operations?
Well, that's a good question. There haven't really been very many fire. I mean, this is actually one of the only ones that I'm aware of. There was another one where they did contact us a couple years ago, but I would hope they would contact us. I don't believe that there are very many fires that are happening on these sites.
To that, Mulder said, quote, I'm biting my tongue right now. Commissioners voted to continue the hearing to December 5th, with Commissioner Lorna McFarlane voting against. Also at the meeting, permitting of an existing 33,000 square foot outdoor cannabis farm in the Miranda area was approved with a majority vote. Also approved were permits for a Los Angeles-based operator's three sites totaling about 50,000 square feet in the Neyland, Showers Pass, and Pilot Ridge areas. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
In a nationally watched murder trial, a man with troubling ties to Humboldt County, Jason Spillers, testified today about his role in trying to save the lives of a mother and child after a 2020 stabbing incident. His statement shed light on disturbing family dynamics within the polyamorous household at the center of the case. This story, written by Kim Kemp of Redheaded Black Belt, includes voiceover reports.
In a nationally watched murder trial, a man with ties to Humboldt County, Jason Spillers, has taken the witness stand, wearing the orange jumpsuit of a jail inmate. The trial revolves around Chloe Driver, accused of fatally stabbing her 13-month-old daughter Hannah in December 2020 and then trying to kill herself. The case has garnered widespread attention due to the unusual dynamics of a polygamous relationship Driver shared with Brian Joyce, also known as Benjamin Ben Michael or Z, and two sister wives. The state brought Spillers to testify about what he saw when Hannah's father, Z, attempted to save his child's life after the stabbing, and how he, Spillers, held Driver's wounds in an attempt to stop her bleeding and save her life. In addition, he testified to the behavior of the members of the relationship, including the subservient role of the women. An article published after his testimony yesterday described this aspect of what Spillers said. Z was the head of the household when it came to his family, believing in a patriarchal family and traditional gender roles. When pressed by prosecutors if that was biblically based, Spillers replied,
No, it's just psychologically sound. Men are better leaders. They are better decision makers. They can regulate their emotions in a way that women cannot, and they're just better leaders. I mean, these are women, you know. They want to run and laugh and be silly on the beach while me and Z are sitting here discussing doctorate-level perceptions and quantum physics. But these women don't have these types of conversations. They do what women do, he added. We're not having these conversations with these women. I am not even sure they are capable of that.
Spillers recounted his own unusual behavior during his testimony, for instance, saying that he drinks his own urine daily. Spillers' statements on the superiority of men in the nationally watched trial link back to alleged threats he made to community members in the southern Humboldt area, including his claim that a young woman was his possession. According to a 2021 press release by the Humboldt County Sheriff's Department, Spillers was at that time wanted on a nationwide warrant and was reported to be armed and dangerous after being spotted in Garberville. Community members were urged to be vigilant, with one local telling us at the time that Spillers had made threats to kidnap, rape, murder, and torture numerous children, teens, and women in our town. In December 2022, a Humboldt County woman published a letter accusing Spillers of cyberstalking. She urged residents to report any suspicious messages they received to the authorities, and described the fear caused by Spiller's alleged online harassment. Spiller's run-ins with the law culminated in November 2021, when he was arrested in Sonoma County. In an interview with Redheaded Black Belt following his arrest, one of his victims described Spiller's alleged threats and criminal behavior that had deeply concerned many in the community. He is currently charged in North Carolina with 14 counts of interstate communications of threats in violation of 18 U.S.C. Section 875C. The alleged offenses occurred in October 2023. He has recently requested to represent himself in the charges against him. As the trial over the death of baby Hannah continues, Spiller's connection to Southern Humboldt ties his disturbing behavior here to an even darker case that is being watched across the nation.
Testimony in the Georgia versus Chloe Driver case by Court TV can be located on the KMUD website. Fortuna robbery suspect arrested while two suspects remain at large. The Humboldt County Sheriff's Office has made an arrest in a violent robbery and attempted homicide in Fortuna that left a man with serious injuries. On April 13, 2024, the victim was attacked in the 3500 block of Newburgh Road, where he was robbed at gunpoint, shot in the shoulder, and severely assaulted, sustaining injuries to his head and face. Following an intensive investigation by HCSO and the Humboldt County Drug Task Force, one of the suspects, 44-year-old Jackson Perro of Scotia, has been arrested. Perro faces charges of attempted murder, mayhem, and robbery and is being held at the Humboldt County Correctional Facility. Authorities have identified two other suspects, Michael Cady, 34, of McKinleyville, and Christopher Overholt, 42, of Lolita. Both men are wanted on charges of attempted murder, mayhem, robbery, burglary, and conspiracy to commit a crime, and felony warrants have been issued for their arrests. Anyone with information on this crime is encouraged to contact the HCSO at 707-445-7251 or by contacting the crime tip line at 707-268-2539. A documentary film about Indigenous women leaders from the Yurok, Hoopa, and Karuk tribes building educational resources to share Indigenous land management practices will be shown at a special event at the Arcata Theater Lounge this weekend. We go to Lauren Schmidt for this report.
We will be discussing a very important and powerful new film, Firelighters. Fire is medicine. For generations, Native peoples burned the land as a way of taking care of it. But as governments stepped in to restrict controlled burns, this practice went unacknowledged. Now, Yurok, Karuk, and Hoopa women are reclaiming fire and their tribe's way of life. Now I have the distinct honor of introducing Margot Robbins.
Ayikwi, nicknow Margot Robbins. I am the Executive Director for the Cultural Fire Management Council, cultural practitioner, a mom, and a grandma. As part of the Cultural Fire Management Council, we have been burning for over 10 years, zero escapes. We focus primarily on the Upper Yurok Reservation and the places we burn are culturally important because they have the resources necessary for us to continue our cultural lifeways. So as time has passed, we have become more and more knowledgeable about the intricacies of cultural burning in our homelands.
Thank you, Margot. We're not only for joining us here, but really working to bring fire back to our landscape. I want to throw it over to the Director of Traditional Fire.
My name is Elizabeth Azuz, and I am the Director of Traditional Fire and the Treasurer to the Board of Cultural Fire Management Council. I came on basically really excited about this. When I knew Margot was doing this, I was working on another project, and an elder had asked me to, when I was done, to help Margot, and I waited patiently for her to approach me and talk to me about what was going on, and very excited to join the team. I've been working with fire since I was a very little person, and this is near and dear to my heart. And so watching our community thrive and grow from this has been one of my greatest joys, because I get to see young local people have jobs and, you know, increase their family's ability to live well here on the river and not have to leave. So it's been a great joy for me to watch all of this happen in our community and to know that we were the ones that are here helping it happen, watching the community grow, watching the fires tend the environment has been really overwhelming for me. And having everybody on board with the same idea and the same goals is definitely moving our future forward in a better way.
First of all, congratulations on the new film, Firelighters, Fire is Medicine. If you want to share a little behind the scenes on how this first got started.
It focuses on the cultural use of fire, and I think she reached out to Elizabeth about coming to do some video while we were burning. And so in the interest of educating the general public about the need for more fire on the land in order to help ecosystems become more resilient and healthy, we said, yes, you can come and film while we are burning. We're out there to take care of the land, which takes care of the people. We're just in it telling our story about the necessity of reclaiming our right as Native people to utilize fire, and how we were able to reclaim that right here in our homelands, and to share the good word that if we're able to do it, other people can too.
Yeah, so Sandy actually did reach out to me, and her approach was that she had directed Apache 8 about the all-female firefighting unit that had protected their reservation for like 30 years. And it kind of piqued my interest and curiosity. And so when I approached Margot, I was like, you know, what do you think about this? And, you know, like she was saying at the time, it was like, we kind of need to get the word out about what we're doing and what good fire can do. And, you know, who knew it was going to lead to this, to be honest? I mean, I had absolutely no idea she was going to throw us out there worldwide. But it's really exciting to be involved in this project and to watch it evolve over the time. It seems like it's been forever that we were filming. Now to know that it will be coming out in a film and we'll be there for everyone to see it, it's really exciting to know that our work is getting out there and that people will begin to understand how important it is for all of us to carry this forward.
The film's byline reads, quote, "For centuries, most landscapes in North America were shaped by fire, between lightning strikes and indigenous burns. Indigenous people had deep knowledge of the art of using fire and still do today," end quote. Firelighters will premiere worldwide on November 18th. However, North Coast residents will have a very special opportunity this Saturday, November 16th, for a community screening of the film at the Arcata Theater Lounge, featuring the women with the Cultural Fire Management Council.
For the full conversation about Firelighters, Fire is Medicine, visit kmud.org. In national news, Trump nominates Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to head Health and Human Services, along with other cabinet picks. Our partners at KPFA brings you the details.
President-elect Trump says he will nominate anti-vaccine activist and former presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to head the sprawling Department of Health and Human Services. Sagar Magani has more.
Kennedy would head the massive Health and Human Services Department, which oversees everything from drug, vaccine, and food safety to Medicare.
We will make Americans healthy again.
Kennedy endorsed Trump in August after dropping his own independent presidential bid. The son of the late Attorney General is one of the world's most prominent anti-vaccine activists and has long advanced the debunked idea that vaccines cause autism. During a House hearing, California Democrat Robert Garcia was aghast.
That someone that wants to gut the NIH HHS, and other services could be put in charge of health of any kind in this country.
Sagar Meghani, Washington.
President-elect Donald Trump has chosen an attorney who led the legal team that defended him at his New York hush money criminal trial to serve as Deputy Attorney General, the second highest-ranking office at the Justice Department. Trump made the announcement of Todd Blanche today. Blanche is a former federal prosecutor. He's been a key figure on Trump's defense team, both in the New York case that ended in a conviction in May and the federal cases brought by Justice Department Special Counsel Jack Smith. If confirmed as Deputy Attorney General by the Republican-led Senate, Blanche would manage the day-to-day operations of the sprawling Justice Department, which Trump has vowed to radically overhaul. Of President-elect Trump's controversial run of appointments this week to run the federal agencies during his administration, the selection of former Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz is the one drawing the most scrutiny. More from Mitch McCann.
According to reporting from the New York Times, a number of Republican senators appear skeptical of Matt Gaetz's chances of being confirmed as America's Attorney General. He's got his work really cut out for him, Senator Joni Ernst reportedly chuckled, while Senator Susan Collins said, "I was shocked by the announcement." In recent years, the Florida congressman had been the subject of a sex trafficking investigation, which resulted in no charges being laid. Hours after President-elect Trump announced the nomination, Gaetz resigned from Congress, effectively ending a House ethics investigation into him for sexual misconduct. Mitch McCann, New York.
Ray Hamill brings us details of all the big local sports stories of the week, including all the latest NCS football and soccer news, as well as some college basketball, and why it will be a big weekend for local youth football.
The Ferndale Wildcats enjoyed their biggest win of the season in football this past weekend, clinching a share of this year's Little Four Championship. Hello and welcome to this week's K-Mud News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on that story in just a moment as we take a look at all of the big local sports stories this week, including all the latest high school and college football news, some college basketball, how the local teams fared in this week's North Coast Section soccer playoffs, and why this weekend will be a big one for local youth football. But first up, the Ferndale Wildcats dug deep in their regular season finale in football over the weekend, handing the Arcata Tigers their first loss of the fall and clinching a share of the Little Four Championship with the Tigers. Arcata came into the game with an overall record of 9-0 and was 5-0 in the Little Four, but they were unable to close out a perfect regular season against a determined Ferndale team. 3 weeks after suffering a lopsided road loss to Arcata, the Wildcats would not be denied this time around and battled to a 27-21 win in both teams' final conference game. Also in action last weekend, the Del Norte Warriors clinched the Big Four Championship outright with a 33-32 win at St. Bernard's in a highly entertaining and exciting game that went down to the final seconds. With the win, which was their seventh straight, the Warriors closed out the regular season with a record of 8-2 overall and 3-0 in the Big Four. The conference championship is their fifth straight. In other weekend games, the Fortuna Huskies defeated the Eureka Loggers 28-20, Hoopa beat McKinleyville 22-17, and South Fork fell to Stuart Hall 64-34. The win for the Huskies ensured they would be playoff eligible, and they closed out the regular season with a record of 4-6 overall and 2-1 in the Big Four. The loss ended the season for the Loggers, who closed out 3-7 and 1-2. Hoopa closed out 4-6 and finished third in the Little Four with a record of 2-4, while McKinleyville went winless for the second straight year. The loss for South Fork also ended their season, and the Cubs will not advance to the North Coast Section playoffs. And speaking of the NCS football playoffs, 3 weeks of postseason action kicks off this weekend with several big games featuring local teams. The Arcata Tigers received a higher seed than any other HDNL team as they get set to play for a first ever section title in the sport. Arcata is seeded number 1 in the Division 6 bracket and opens against number 8 Bethel at McKinleyville High School on Friday night. Four other local teams have qualified for the Division 7 postseason tournament, making up half of the 8-team field. Fresh off their big win on Saturday, the Ferndale Wildcats are seeded number 2 in the bracket and will open at home against number 7 Vallejo on Saturday afternoon. Del Norte received the number 4 seed in the bracket and also opens at home, playing number 5 Kelseyville in Crescent City on Friday night. Fortuna and St. Bernard's also play on Friday night. The Huskies are seeded number 6 and open at number 3 Piedmont, while the Crusaders are seeded number 8 and will open at number 1 Moreau Catholic. Only 2 Mendocino County teams made the NCS playoffs. After going 7-3 in the regular season, the Ukiah Wildcats received the number 1 seed in Division 4 and will open at number 8 Alameda, also on Friday night. The Round Valley Mustangs also qualified for the NCS 8-person Division 2 tournament, and they are seeded number 3 in the 4-team bracket, opening against number 2 Elsie Allen on Friday night. In local college football, meanwhile, College of the Redwoods lost for just the second time this season, falling to De Anza 25-22 in a key American Pacific 7 Conference showdown at the Redwood Bowl. The loss drops the Corsairs to 6-2 in the season and 3-1 in conference, while De Anza improved to 3-0 in conference and is tied with Syracuse atop the standings. COO, which has just one conference game remaining, can still tie for the championship if Syracuse beats De Anza this weekend, and the Corsairs then beat Syracuse in their final regular season game next week. The Corsairs will try to get back to winning ways when they host Cabrillo in their final home game of the season in a non-conference showdown at the Redwood Bowl on Saturday afternoon. In local college basketball, meanwhile, the College of the Redwoods and Cal Poly Humboldt teams were in action this past weekend. The Humboldt men traveled to Washington for a pair of tournament games, beating Simon Fraser 88-67 on Friday night before suffering a close 78-75 loss to Western Washington on Saturday. The Jacks played their home opener on Tuesday night, defeating Simpson 84-62 and going to 2-1 on the young season. The Cal Poly Humboldt women lost 2 games in Rockland over the weekend, falling 83-75 to Alaska Fairbanks and 81-48 to Alaska Anchorage. The CR men continued their impressive start to the new season with a 79-64 win over San Mateo in their home opener on Friday night as they improved to 4-1 on the season. The CR women were in action on Saturday and improved to 2-1 with a 63-29 win at Contra Costa. In the NCS soccer playoffs, meanwhile, 6 HDNL teams were in action this week. In the Division 3 bracket, the St. Bernard's girls won their 4th NCS championship in 5 years with a 2-1 win over Mendocino at Fort Bragg on Wednesday night. Also on Wednesday, the Fortuna and Eureka girls teams both won their Division 1 semi-finals. The Loggers edged Arcata 7-6 on penalty kicks after both teams played to a 1-1 tie in regulation and overtime, while the Huskies barely got the better of Del Norte 1-0. In Division 1 boys action, the McKinleyville Panthers bowed out of the postseason with a 3-1 loss at Making Waves Academy. This year's McKinleyville team went further in the playoffs than ever before, including a big 3-0 win at Fortuna in Saturday's quarterfinals. And finally this week, it will be a big weekend for local youth football with 3 championship games scheduled for Sunday. The Six Rivers Youth Conference championship games will take place at Fortuna High School, with the single A final set for 9:30 a.m., the double A final set for noon, and the triple A championship game at 2:30 p.m. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, and thanks to our reporters Daniel Mintz, as well as our partners at KPFA. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org, SoundCloud, Instagram, and Facebook. That's where you can see stories, links, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting from the KMUD studio in Redway, I'm Lisa Music.